Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
Welcome back, everybody. As we got rolling here on a Thursday afternoon in the Sun City, with the emphasis on sun, that's for sure. We got a busy show. Michael Plundo's here. Alberto Dueta's here. You just heard Adrian mention his article about Copa America and talking about the U.S. men's national team, which we can talk about here on the show today. We also have Chihuahuas baseball coming up at 6 o'clock. Chihuahuas in Round Rock with Tim Haggerty calling the action from the Dell Diamond out there in Round Rock. In fact, let me check the weather, Round Rock today. 40% chance of rain in a couple hours. We'll see if this game is able to keep playing. We'll find out. Isolated thunderstorms. Hey, isolated thunderstorms. Will the game start on time? If not, will we have bonus sports talk? I guess we'll find out. It's always fun when a chance of rain could possibly delay a baseball game and put us on the radio without commercials for an extra hour. Adrian, that could be the case today. You never know.
You never know. That's right. We got sunny weather, hot weather over here, and horrible thunderstorms, power outages out in East Texas.
Oh, man. I know. It's been rough out there in East Texas. So we'll talk to Hags coming up here in a little less than 2 hours from now. Plus, 5 o'clock hour is going to be great. We've got Coop joining us live at 5. Michael Cooper, who's going to be in El Paso this Saturday from 11 to 2 at Sun City Collectibles, 6020 Donovan on the west side, Suite A2, for an autograph signing that'll be taking place. 3 hours with Michael Cooper. So if you are a UNM Lobo fan, if you are a Lakers fan, if you are just a sports fan and you want to meet new Hall of Famer Michael Cooper. That's right. He's in the class of 2024 for the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He'll be on with us less than an hour from now. Looking forward to that conversation. Looking forward to seeing Coop in El Paso this Saturday. And looking forward to also getting a chance to talk to Wilmer Cabrera, the brand new head coach and technical director of El Paso Locomotive FC. He's going to be joining us coming up here inside our 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studios at 520. So a busy 5 o'clock hour and a busy show for you here today as we get you right up to Chihuahuas baseball, assuming things start on time. Now, a lot to cover on the show today. A lot of great sports tonight. Rangers, Panthers, Game 5. Whoever wins has the inside track on that Eastern Conference Finals series and a trip to the Stanley Cup. Then, Mavs trying again to close out their Western Conference Finals series with the T-Wolves. Big one for them because the winner gets Boston. Minnesota trying to stay alive. Dallas trying to wrap things up. By the way, Mavs have only won one championship in their history. That was back in 2011. The Minnesota T-Wolves have only been to a Western Conference final once in their career, and that was in the 03-04 season with Kevin Garnett. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens. You know, the Boston Celtics are like the New York Yankees of the NBA, and Dallas is hoping for a chance to win number two. Minnesota hoping to get their first ever NBA title. So all that is happening here tonight in our sports schedule that's coming up. We also found out that Chicago Bears will be this year's Hard Knocks focus for HBO during the preseason. And I started thinking, have the Bears ever been on Hard Knocks, or is this going to be their first appearance?
They've refused it.
Well, You can refuse it when you go to the playoffs, right?
So when you're in the playoffs, you don't qualify. I think you can refuse it once, but if NFL Films asks you, it might be twice. I might be getting that wrong, but the owner has been very against this. Like, their whole ownership group has been against the idea of Hard Knocks.
This is kind of funny, though. I like how George McCaskey, who's the chairman of the Bears, said, quote, "We're told there is some interest in other teams being on the program, and we welcome that interest."
There's not a lot of teams signing up to be on Hard Knocks. That's just the reality, Steve. It's a behind-the-scenes look at your program. You've got to do a lot of extra work on your side as, you know, a front office person to approve what goes out. And if you slip up or something gets out there, then it falls on you, you know?
Listen, the truth is this. The Bears, every team, in my opinion, should at least be on once on Hard Knocks. They all should, right? And the Bears have said no forever because this show debuted in 01. So almost 25 years worth of Hard Knocks. No Chicago Bears. Do we have a list of all the teams that have been on Hard Knocks so we know who hasn't been?
I don't have in front of me, but
I can find that, right?
Yeah, it's easy. Yeah, you just look up teams on Hard Knocks.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, there has to be a way to do that. I'm just curious to see who has not been on yet. That's the interesting thing. Okay, here we go. Let's take a look at this. And apparently, the Bears, Broncos, and Saints can all be forced to do Hard Knocks in the future. Those are the teams that could be forced to.
Well, so that was for this past year because they missed the playoffs.
Right.
So that would have only been for this year. That's not going to happen, obviously, now that the Bears are the team here moving forward. Here are the teams who have never done it before, okay? So it's the Panthers. They've never been a part of it. Like we mentioned, here are the Bears. Packers have actually never been a part of Hard Knocks. Vikings, Saints, Giants, Eagles, and Seahawks, it looks like. Commanders haven't either. Bills haven't either. Jaguars haven't either. Patriots, no Patriots. Steelers have never been on Hard Knocks. Titans have never been on Hard Knocks. That's your list.
You know what else is interesting? Apparently, if you are a team that has a first-year coach, you can say no to Hard Knocks.
Yeah, that's how. That's why Robert Saleh last year, it wasn't his first year, but that's why they were eligible. They wanted to do it the first year that Saleh was there, and it was actually declined. So they ended up going whatever it was. I think it was the Chargers-Rams that year. It was a kind of a weird year for Hard Knocks.
So apparently, if you've done Hard Knocks in the last 10 years, you're also exempt. And that list includes Miami, the Jets, Arizona, Detroit, Indy, Dallas, the Rams, Chargers, Vegas, Cleveland, Tampa Bay, Houston, and Atlanta. Because in-season still counts.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, there's still, like that list I just reeled off, there's still a lot of teams who haven't done it.
Right, right. And then if you have not made the playoffs in either of the last 2 years, you also have a shot to get in. So that's what it's also about. It's a really interesting criteria that the NFL has with HBO and Hard Knocks.
You're not going to get the Super Bowl champions or the teams who are rising in the playoffs right there. They want to get like the team kind of on the down, who was on the downswing before, and then maybe build up some hope. My favorite year of Hard Knocks has to definitely be the Cleveland Browns season, Baker Mayfield in a trailer. Love that one.
I'll say this, between Chicago, Denver, and New Orleans, I probably would like to see Chicago just because it's Caleb Williams. I feel like that is an interesting storyline to see how he adjusts during training camp because, you know, Denver really doesn't move the needle for me. I don't need to see Sean Payton and watch him during Hard Knocks. New Orleans doesn't really have any storylines I'm interested in either. So I'm not saying I'm excited about the Bears, but at least the Bears has some interesting points heading into Hard Knocks this season.
I'm very excited about the Bears on my side. Keenan Allen, wide receiver, who was recently acquired by the Bears, he's got a great story on himself. Romo Dunze, remember, they got him also in the first round. That was a real great acquisition. They also got DeAndre Swift, who had a Super Bowl run with the Eagles. He'll be featured on Hard Knocks. They're going to feature Kevin Byard, who also came over from the Eagles. He was a free agent acquisition for the Bears. And then I'm interested if they dive into more about there. Young, rising offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. So a lot of good names here for this Chicago Bears Hard Knocks. I think it's going to be fun. And Caleb Williams will be the star of the show.
And I'll say this too. The fact is, if you want to try to grow your fan interest, that show does it for you. I mean, think about how many people, more people, talked about the Jets last year because they were on Hard Knocks and Aaron Rodgers was on for the very first time. I mean, that was a big story. It was a big selling pitch for the Jets organization until Rodgers went down with the injury. A lot of people, a lot of eyes were on the Jets because of that show. And every team is like that. Cowboys had the same thing. I feel like even though the Bears have resisted all these years, there will be more positives than negatives, knowing everybody in America that watches Hard Knocks will now have a much better understanding about that franchise.
You know, you and I see it that way too, because I agree with you. It's good. It's a good spotlight on your program. It just gets your fans excited. I'm with you 100%. I read a story last year in The Athletic. It pulled players who had been part of Hard Knocks before, and they said it's the worst process ever. They hate cameras all around them. They feel like there's zero privacy. And I'm not saying that they need a lot of these moments to be private, but I feel like there are a lot of players, coaches, and team office personnel who don't like Hard Knocks. Just as more of a distraction than anything else. But for the fan, for the NFL product, it enhances it. And by the way, I love the in-season product too, because last year with the Dolphins, I felt like they captured a lot of attention through their in-season Hard Knocks. Year before, it was the Colts. They had the whole Jim Irsay drama go on in the middle of that. And the year before that, it was the Cardinals. So they've done a good job of the in-season Hard Knocks as well.
But let me say this, okay? And I'm just going to use this as an example. Based on the criteria, we would not be able to see Scotty Walden 24/7 in his first season as the head coach of UTEP. But tell me, if you were able to put together a Hard Knock style show that could come out weekly during fall training camp, edited, voiced over, all of that, and be there to show people before the season starts, and you don't think that would get more people in this town ramped up and excited about UTEP football, you're crazy. It would do wonders, wonders for a program like this to have a show like that that could spend the first month before the season starts being with these coaches and players 24/7 ramping up for a season like this with a guy like that.
Yeah, you could take it for every sport, right? I agree with you. Football is one of those that I think would get a lot of people to be interested in. By the way, UTEP TV times announced today and all the TV schedule, which was really favorable to the Miners for CUSA. However, you know, with this topic right here, I could see it for volleyball as they're continuing to rise as a program. I could see a real cool Hard Knocks version for both basketball teams, men's basketball, women's basketball. And yeah, the access, the behind the scenes side of things, I think that's why people love Hard Knocks and just the concept of what it's about.
I want to talk about UTEP's schedule next as we continue here on Sports Talk, because as you mentioned, it does seem like the schedule gods did UTEP a favor in terms of all the matchups, game times, start times, TV coverage, all that. So we'll talk about that when we return. If you want to weigh in on the show, 505-6009, 505-6009. It's great to have you here on Sports Talk. As we go to Charlie 1, let's get our first traffic update of the afternoon. Here's Charlie with this report. 20 past as we continue here on Sports Talk. 505-6009. That is our telephone number to get into the show. Love to hear from you. As UTEP today issued their release, the whole league actually did. I shouldn't say UTEP did this. CUSA announced all the times for this upcoming season for football. So let's talk about it. Because things get underway at Nebraska, August 31st, 1:30, and that game will be seen nationally on Fox, Adrian. That is a national game on Saturday, August 31st.
Yeah, this is big, man. I mean, another, 1:30 local time, Fox national TV kickoff for UTEP right here. Exceptional. I mean, as far as visibility goes, exceptional right there.
By the way, I did notice one thing as we continue to talk, okay? There are still two TBAs in terms of start times, two TBAs in terms of TV, and one thing I have noticed, four out of UTEP's 12 games will be on CBS Sports Network. We have to switch our cable and find a way to get CBS Sports Network on our TVs in here. Has to happen.
Don't worry, man. We got it. We got it over here on the streams. You know, we're good. YouTube
really?
TV's got CBS Sports Network.
I thought you were going to tell me that you're going to go to to Sports East.
Oh no. We don't give away these secrets on this radio station.
Oh, is that it?
Stream East.
Stream East.
Yeah, that's
there
right.
You go.
Yeah,
Stream East.
Our favorite website ever. Yeah.
Just close the windows.
Yeah, just make sure you got a quick hand ready to go.
You have to. And make sure you're quiet and discreet about it, too.
And you're not around family.
Yeah, exactly. Don't open up that thing in front of the kids. At least not until the game's on. Then you can share it.
That's right. CBS Sports Network on all of these. And the TBA, Steve, my assumption is those are probably ESPN Plus. Maybe they get to one of the other ESPN networks or like a CBS Sports Network type of thing.
Well, I'm convinced the Colorado State game is going to be on the Mountain.
Wait,
they got rid of that network, didn't they?
Yeah,
didn't the Mountain West get rid of it?
I think so. I'm not too familiar with their whole television model right now. Even if it's on Mountain West Sports Network or whatever it is, that was very accessible. It was free. It was on their website. You could hit it, and the stream was excellent. So I liked their format. Steve, I'm just so happy. We're far from Stadium. We're far from BIN Sports. We're far from. Remember, there was
one point
where it was Facebook Watch. You could only watch one of them on like a Facebook stream. UTEP games over the past have been as inaccessible as possible, and now the accessibility is there for football fans.
So I'm looking at what they're doing. They apparently have games on Fox Sports. This is the Mountain West. Fox Sports, Fox, CBS Sports Network. And then, no, this can't be possible. Apparently, they also have four games on CBS itself.
Wow. Yeah.
But that also means they're playing UCLA, Navy, Colorado, Stanford. You know what I mean? It's not like they're going up against themselves.
Yeah, it's not a San Jose versus Colorado State game.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right, let's get back to UTEP for a second. Let's do this. So, they play Fox on against Nebraska on Fox. That's going to be the first game of the season, August 31st. Their game against Southern Utah, their home opener on September 7th, will be on ESPN Plus. Then, they have two road games in a row: Liberty on the 14th, and the aforementioned Colorado State on the 21st. The Liberty game will be a 4 o'clock kickoff on ESPN+. The Colorado State game, we don't know the time on the 21st. We don't know the network. They come back home for Sam Houston. That will be the conference home opener, CBS Sports Network, Thursday, October 3rd. By the way, their October schedule features two Thursday games, a Wednesday game, and a Tuesday game. So let's get right to it. The Western Kentucky road game will be on Thursday, October 10th, 6 p.m. kick on ESPNU. Then, 6 days later, they host FIU. It's a Wednesday, October 16th, 7 o'clock. CBS Sports Network will have that one, home game. 6 days later, Tuesday the 22nd, they go on the road at La Tech, 6 o'clock, CBS Sports Network. Then
wait, real quick, Steve. Can I jump in and just ask you your thoughts on midweek games? Did we learn anything from midweek's game? And has your opinion changed on it?
Yeah, UTEP was good last year during the midweek games. They won two of those midweek games last year. I'm all for the midweek games.
Cassaction, right?
A little cassaction.
I can admit I was wrong on my initial take, thinking it was more harmful. The only ones it really harms is the fans, right? The local fans who want to go to the Sun Bowl, watch the games. And
yeah,
it's just hard for a working class town to make it to a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday night game if they've got family. So you're most likely watching it on TV, but that's the win. I don't remember a time where UTEP was on the road in October and had a more memorable moment than a Lamborghini photo op that they had in Florida International in that game. So that was a real standout moment, and last year's season was unsuccessful.
I was there. We took a photo with my, at that point, what was he? I guess he was still 11-year-old, next to the Lambo on the field at halftime. Cool moment. Cool moment.
Cade McConnell game.
Yeah, it was Cade's time to shine. That's right. That is right. Okay, so then, I'm all for, by the way, are you guys, just out of curiosity, let's get Michael Plundo, Alberto Arueta weighing in. Alberto, you first. Do you like midweek games, yes or no?
Yeah, I think that they give the school an opportunity to use the middle week to get on Prime TV. When that happened, the Lamborghini moment, it was on ESPN.
Yeah, that's right.
That night. So it's like, yeah, I really like it.
But that game was a CBS game, wasn't it? Or was it an ESPN game?
No, I believe it was a CBS game.
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. Like I don't remember what I ate yesterday for lunch, let alone where that game was last year.
I remember is that's probably the most memorable broadcast or road game period in conference that I can remember for UTEP football in years.
I would think so, too. All right, Michael, what about you?
I like the thought of having games during the midweek. I think it's good. It gives us entertainment during the week because, we have to wait a full week for football till Saturday, Sunday, Thursday. So I like the idea. I mean, if you remember back in 2020, I think we saw this happen a lot with the COVID, with all the outbreaks that teams started to have. They kind of had to think on their feet of how they could move these games, and I think it worked out for them perfectly, and I think you're going to see a new wave of it happening.
Yeah, as long as I don't care what day of the week they play, as long as they've got a chance to win. And if you look at their opponents in these midweek games in October, Sam Houston, Western Kentucky, FIU, La Tech. You look at that schedule and you say to yourself, okay, you could see at least two wins if things go well. If things go well. Adrian, what about you? Western on the road is going to be very difficult. La Tech, who knows what to make of it. But Sam Houston at home and FIU at home, both potentially could be dubs.
Yeah, potentially. I don't know.
You haven't dug into the season like I have.
I haven't dug into this, yeah.
All right.
I probably say no. I'm going to go one out of those four.
One and three?
Yeah, one and
who
three.
Who do they lose to? They lose to Sam Houston or FIU?
I think they lose to FIU. And I don't.
What they did last year to FIU? They destroyed them.
They always destroy FIU. FIU also travels terribly. But UTEP always has a clunker in one of these conference open. And it's usually in their conference opener. So maybe let me switch it. I'll say Sam Houston.
Really?
Yeah, I'll say Sam Houston.
Yeah, Sam Houston showed some promise last year. They weren't bad.
Also, the 6-day turnaround is horrible.
Oh, that sucks.
That's terrible. Going at Western Kentucky and then come back. Imagine they lose to Western, and then it's like a must-win game against FIU, and they've got only a 6-day turnaround? No.
I know. But, I mean, look, the truth is this. I mean, and we haven't even done the UTEP preseason podcast, but just if you're just going at this for the first time, you're looking at the schedule, you're like, okay, Nebraska loss, Southern Utah win, Liberty loss, Colorado State loss. You're 1-3 heading into Sam Houston, right? Because if they lose that, they're 1-4. They'll be 1-5 after Western. You hope to God they beat FIU. And then they got La Tech on the road, Middle at home, Kennesaw State at home, at Tennessee, at New Mexico State. This could be another 3-9, 4-8 season.
And it could be inspiring. As crazy as that sounds, right?
Yes.
Because if they're three wins or two wins, which might be the reality, there still could be progress. And I'm glad we're doing this before Cade McConnell rejoins us next week. Because, I'll tell it to his face, but I just still don't feel the greatest about this team.
No. But I'll say this. Will this be the most fun losing team ever? Could be.
Maybe, yeah.
We might say this could be like Gillespie's first year when they won 6 basketball games and fans are all excited going, man, this team is fun to watch. They don't win, but they're fun. And then all of a sudden they get a couple of big recruits and the next thing you know they turn it around.
You know, that month of November to me is going to be the big one because during the Dana Dimmel era and even during the Sean Coogler era, the month of November was such a grind. It felt like that's when the success and, the injuries starting to pile up and stuff like that. But if this team is able to be inspiring, and I'm targeting that last game, November 30th, 2:00 kickoff at New Mexico State during rivalry week.
Tough.
That's the one right there.
I know. By the way, if UTEP is better than 1-3 out of the first 4 games, Scotty Walden should be coach of the year in Conference USA.
Agreed.
Let's be honest. Look at that schedule come out of the gate. Nebraska, Liberty, and Colorado State all on the road. Three of your first four games.
Brutal.
They're not doing Scotty Walden any favors this year.
Not to mention only five home games and only one evening kickoff for fans on a Saturday. So that's tough. Like, I feel for fans. I saw their comments today earlier today. I feel for them because if they're big fans who want to watch this team, they're going to have to do some maneuvering in their own schedule, you know?
But it's like they have six home games. Let's be honest. New Mexico State never sells that many tickets for their own fans. So if you really wanted to go pack Aggie Memorial Stadium and make it a UTEP home game, you could do it very easily. And it won't even cost you a lot of money because they don't charge much to go see those games anyway.
But we both know this town and these two towns, right? Because they love evening kickoffs. They love to tailgate all day and you know, have fun and then go off to the game. Doing a 2 o'clock is tough, especially off of Thanksgiving week.
Yeah, but do you really want to go on a Saturday night, the Thanksgiving weekend, and go spend Saturday night? You'd rather go at 2 o'clock, wouldn't you? I mean, to be honest, for me, I'd rather just go at 2, be done by 6, have the rest of the night and not have to worry, instead of being at Aggie Memorial from, let's say, 7 to 11. Not to mention, it's November 30th. It might be cool that night. Do you really want to be in on a, you know, on a cold November night watching those two teams play versus 2 o'clock?
Well, it's a good point, but I would say if you're talking about students are going home during Thanksgiving week, or maybe, you know, they just have plans with their own family. Also, you just factor in the Thanksgiving week period and how difficult it might be. I love that the Battle of I-10 is during the Thanksgiving week, rivalry week. It's where it should be. That kickoff time could hurt some of the UTEP fans going out to Las Cruces or stuff like that. I hope, like you're saying, they realize, hey, I get done early. I get back home in El Paso early. Let's make a trip out of this.
I'm with you. All right. More reaction as we hit 33 past the hour. Let's go to Michael Plundo for SportsCenter, and then we'll come back with more in a moment. 600 ESPN El Paso. Getty was awesome today. Six innings of shutout ball, 8 strikeouts. Astros needed that. And Eric Getty's pitched well in his last 4 starts. And not only that, Hunter Brown's starting to pick it up. Astros rookies and young arms look terrible to start the year, and now they're starting to find their groove, which is good because a couple of their rehabbing arms are both dealing with major elbow and forearm issues. Talking about Jose Urquidy, who's trying to make his way back, and now he's going to be on the shelf for a while. And you still have Luis Garcia coming back from Tommy John. Lance McCullers Jr. can never stay healthy. You need these arms to keep you in the race right now.
Yeah, and you talk about Verlander, too. And when load management has been thrown in the mix this season, more than recent seasons, at least for baseball, you wonder, do they start to just kind of eye August and September to really ramp up these guys and really make that postseason push, which it's all about, versus right now, you know, just trying to get the most out of these young guys here.
I'm with you. So when we're talking of UTEP's schedule, we mentioned they've got 2 Thursday games, a Wednesday and a Tuesday in October, okay? And all the games start either at 7 o'clock for the home games or 6 for the road games. Sam Houston, the first home game will be on CBS Sports Network. That's Thursday, October 3rd. A week later, ESPNU will have that Western Kentucky road game. Then CBS Sports Network for Wednesday, October 16th. That's the home game with FIU. God, UTEP should make it Vice Night. That would be awesome. Wouldn't it be great if UTEP just did that right in their face and did like a UTEP Vice Night?
Wow, that would look really cool. They at least have to do a promo video, right? That's the night they're going to honor the UTEP Athletics Hall of Fame, the class of 2024.
Yeah.
Imagine if they also threw in a little Vice Night.
They won't do it. It would be hilarious if they did it, but you know they won't do it.
Yeah, that would be awesome, though.
But it would be so funny.
It would. They could really capitalize on it and use some of those colors. Yeah.
Maybe they did Cops Night and did like a whole Cops theme show for that and did something like that instead. Instead of Vice Night, they make it Cops Night and they do a tribute to the old Fox show Cops. Is Cops still on the air? Or is it off the air now?
I watch the reruns still, so that's the case. Yeah, love when I see El Paso on it.
Then you got La Tech on a Tuesday night. Good Lord.
That's awful.
God, Tuesday night football. See, I'm good on... Okay, so let me talk about midweek for a second, okay? Wednesday, I'm fine with. Thursday, I don't like Thursday because you're going up against Thursday night NFL football. Like, I feel like nobody's going to watch the first two Thursday games because you have Thursday night NFL football going opposite that. So I'm like, okay, if you're really trying to get eyeballs on midweek college games, why in the heck would you play games on a Thursday? And by the way, in case you're wondering, well, I take that back. You know what? Tampa's playing at Atlanta Thursday, October 3rd. That game sucks. I mean, there actually is a chance that people would be watching the UTEP game that night against against Sam Houston. That's not terrible.
And sometimes people don't necessarily – they might have the ESPN networks, but they don't necessarily have Prime. So.
Good point. Although Thursday, October 10th, that's going to be a game that – I think only El Paso will be watching the UTEP-Western Kentucky game because that's San Francisco and Seattle.
Ooh, yeah, it's a must-watch.
Yeah, it is must-watch. You're right about that. And then they play Wednesday night. Nothing's on a Wednesday. So you got FIU, and then you play Tuesday against La Tech on the road. Like, nothing is on it. There is no football on a Tuesday night. Does Maction actually play on Tuesdays?
Yes, they do.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday?
In November, yes, November. Jeez. Yeah. I mean, that's when you get some of those snow games, like snow all over the field and stuff like that. But that La Tech road game don't even send the backups to that one. That just looks awful.
It does. And by the way, they got to play that. They have two consecutive six-day turnarounds. That's brutal, man. How do you make them – why would you want a team to play twice in consecutive weeks in 6 days? Why wouldn't you at least throw them a bone and let them play maybe on 1 6-day break and then give them at least 7 or 8 days for the next game versus back-to-back 6-day turnarounds?
Yeah, it's tough scheduling by Conference USA, and it just so happens there are times, like a little break time, they have that final weekend of September, that 28th. They don't play that weekend. That's their bye week early on in the season.
Yeah.
And then that stretch that you mentioned, the 22nd all the way to the 2nd, so you got a little bit of a stretch, but then it's like you want it right in the middle. You want a little breather in the middle of the Kazakhstan. You don't want to just have the breather before and after.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. Although I'm looking right now, right, on 10/22. I mean, this is crazy, but on 10/23, actually also on 10/22, you've got Sam Houston at FIU. That's going to be on ESPNU.
So that means FIU also has a quick turnaround because UTEP played them, you know, a week before.
They both have to, right. And then they go to that Tuesday, October 22nd game, and then there's games on the 23rd. Oh, and I guess UTEP does have a break in the sense that at least they don't have to play on the 29th like New Mexico State does at FIU on the 29th.
Yeah, I would say, though, again, having the breaks before and after Kazakhstan, and you have to go 4 straight weeks of doing this on weeknights, that's tough. I mean, from a student-athlete perspective, I mean, we'll get Cade's thoughts on this in the future, but, man, that's a lot. That's grueling right there. Forget even class during the weeks in the month of October.
At least they get what will be a nice, long 10-11-day break before they have to play the November games. I mean, Saturday, November 2nd, they're home against Middle Tennessee. They'll probably love the extra time for that. Saturday, November 9th, home for Kennesaw State. That's senior day. 1:30 kickoff, by the way, for Middle Tennessee on CBS Sports. 2 o'clock kick for Kennesaw State on ESPN platforms. And then they have a week off. They have a bye week before the Tennessee game on the 23rd. And then, as Adrian mentioned, November 30th at New Mexico State. So there's your schedule.
Man, Kennesaw State, game in November 9th for senior day? That's early. Yeah, but it's just how the schedule shakes out.
It's a weird – well, look, we say it's early, right? You've got 5 home games.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. That's the sad reality of this season for UTEP football. I think that the accessibility side is the major plus. It won't just be viewed locally. It'll be viewed nationally and for parents of players and stuff like that. That's great.
But like I said, if you want to go to the Aggie game, that would be your 6th technically home game you could go to if you wanted to make it a home game. Fans could do that in a heartbeat.
It could, yes. And it's an, you know, it's accessible too. We've mentioned that. And I feel like for Aggie Memorial, and maybe that game actually means something, even if it's two teams who are near the bottom, maybe the pride factor will kind of juice up both teams.
Here's my prediction. Mocha's going to come on the air that week and try to tell UTEP fans to buy as many tickets as possible and try to make it a UTEP home game.
Wow. Wow. I like it. I like that a lot. I think you will do that.
I do too.
That's on brand.
Yeah, it is on brand. That's exactly. 42 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. All right, Michael Cooper, Laker great, Lobo great, going to join us live at 5, 20 minutes from now. But up next, it's ABC 7 News, and then we'll come back with more in a moment. 600 ESPN El Paso. 505-6009, that's 505-6009, our telephone number. 5 points guy gets in. Hey, Steve, new listener of the show. It's great. Is there going to be a dining deal this week? Thanks. Dining deals, not this week, 5 points guy. Not this week. Next week, however, yes, there will. And I'm not going to give it away. But all I'm going to tell you is it's going to be one of those deals that, they're going to go fast. That's it. It's the best hint I can give you, Adrian. They're going to go fast next week, for sure.
One of the best ones we've had so far. We've had some excellent restaurants. I would say if I had to put it in a category, it'd be in the top five of the restaurants that we've had.
We've had great restaurants.
Yes, and that just tells you that this one right here is like an El Paso staple.
It is. Just leave it at that. Leave it at that. An El Paso staple. All right. I think you're on the right track, Adrian. I do. I really do. El Paso staple is good.
People want to jump on the station on that one.
I think so, too. All right. So there you go with that 5 points, guy. Appreciate you getting in, though. Appreciate the questions. Good rest of the hour for you. We'll have a good 5 o'clock hour with both Michael Cooper calling into the show here in about 10 minutes. He'll be in El Paso Saturday. Sign autographs and meet all of you at Sun City Collectibles. It's a great store, folks. Great store on Donovan. 6020 Donovan, Suite A2. They do such a good job there, and excited about the fact that Coop's going to be coming to town. One of the all-time great legends of New Mexico Lobo basketball. I mean, really. I don't know if you've ever looked at Michael Cooper's numbers at UNM, but oh my God, it was ridiculous when you start to see his career and what he did with the Lobos. Let me give you a little idea. He only played two seasons, 76-77, 77-78. Averaged 15 a game as a junior, 16 a game as a senior. Remember, before the three-point line, and he was an outside shooter. So you always say, man, if there was a three-point line, what would Michael Cooper have done in those 2 years with the Lobos? Same thing with Luster Goodwin. Miner fans will say this all the time. If Luster Goodwin, Pony, had a three-point line when he was at UTEP, he could easily have been one of the, if not the all-time leading scorer in UTEP history with all the three-point shots he would have made. So that argument has been said there too over the years.
You know, it's amazing. This guy who is just probably before his time. I mean, you think about what he would do as a perimeter scorer now, Michael Cooper. He's also a JUCO All-American transfer, if you think about it. He started at Pasadena City College, transferred, like you mentioned, those final 2 years at New Mexico, and then his senior year, while he helped the team win the WAC championship, he was also a U.S. Basketball Writers Association All-American.
Yep. First team All-WAC. And how about this? Yeah, you're right. First team All-American? That's huge. Huge first-team All-American.
For New Mexico, for the Lobos, and for them to recognize him on a national spotlight like that, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, anyway, we'll talk to Michael Cooper coming up here in just about 5-6 minutes from now as we begin hour number two. It's all coming up right here, 600 ESPN El Paso.
Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, here we go. Start of our second and final hour here on Sports Talk. Excited about this hour because we're going to have some great guests joining us. Michael Cooper is scheduled to join us here any minute. newest member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Nice class, too, when you look at the Naismith Hall of Fame this year. We're dealing with, let's see here, Chauncey Billups, Vince Carter, Walter Davis, Bo Ryan, Charles Smith, and Michael Cooper. The Women's Committee, Simone Augustus. The Men's Veteran Committee, Dick Barnett. The Women's Veteran Committee, Harley Redden. The International Committee, Michelle Timms. And the Contributors Committee, Doug Collins, Herb Simon, Jerry West. All right. By the way, this has to be Jerry West's second. You would think, anyway, that would be his second induction into the Hall, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's probably one of the first ones, right?
Yeah,
first or second.
He was previously enshrined as a player and as a member of the 1960 U.S. team. So I guess this would be as an executive. Wow.
Sorry, man. Sometimes the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame has some weird things.
He is the first member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame to be inducted as both a player and a contributor. I mean, remember, Don Haskins has been inducted twice, once with the 66 team, once as a coach. So he's had two opportunities to be into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Rightfully so. I love those accolades right there. He's one of the best college coaches to ever do it, and he coached one of the greatest teams in college basketball history. I love that. Jerry West, for doing it for three different times, I think maybe that gets excessive.
Well, let me say this, though. He has been... Listen, have you watched...
Winning time? Yes. Yeah.
No wonder you feel the way you do about Jerry West.
I was going to say.
Why. You've been clouded because of that HBO Max show. That's why.
No. I understand that he was nothing like that. So I completely understand that. And I thought, like, are you telling me that he was inducted for Winning Time? No, I'm not there.
All right. I was just, when you're calling it excessive, realizing, hey, Jerry West really was a terrific executive. I mean, he had a lot of success running NBA teams. So in that regard, yeah, he's been very good. So anyway, listen, again, hope to talk to Michael Cooper on the show this hour. I think that'd be a fun conversation. Regardless of whether or not he calls in, he will be here in El Paso Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. out there at Sun City Collectibles signing autographs. So that's happening no matter what, regardless of if we're able to get him on the show today. Also, we are going to get Wilmer Cabrera on the program, which brings us to the Club America article that Alberto wrote about today on the website at 600ESPNElPaso.com. You follow Club America. You have not been shy talking about that. You tell me. I mean, are we having a little controversy here with some of their stars in the U.S. men's national team?
Well, yes, yes, and they also had some controversy with the final that they won this weekend. So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of where the United States men's national team is kind of headed and where their stars play currently and how that affects the national team and the guys that don't play in the bigger leagues like in Europe.
Yeah, no, it's true. Now, are these also players that could play for the Mexican national team as well?
Yeah, that's kind of the funny part or the sad part, if you really look at it from that side, is Zendejas elected not to play for Mexico and to go play in the United States, which to me is an obvious, it's a horrible choice just on paper-wise. Just, you know, those guys are playing in Europe and you're playing in Liga MX. You would have, in my opinion, had a better chance of being on the field had you stayed on the Mexican side. You know, you're born in Ciudad Juarez, but you choose to go to the U.S. side, and now you're kind of paying the price for that, in my opinion, unfortunately.
So what you're telling me is that the U.S. roster is deeper with more talent, which is why Zendejas is having a harder time cracking the depth chart.
Yeah, and it just kind of it plays into also just the state of Liga MX and MLS. MLS, you know, the goal right now is to get these kids young, train them, develop them, and then when they're really good, really young, you sell them out to the European teams, let them have success out there. That's not the same structure that they have in Liga MX. Guys get stuck there. Guys just become stable. staples there like Zendejas has, instead of, you know, making the progress to a European team, even if that is maybe a lower division. Like, you see some guys, there's some forwards that are on the roster for Copa America that they don't play on the first, they don't play in the Premier, they play in the Championship, and they're there, and you're not. You play in Liga MX, so there's kind of those disparities between where you play and where you're going to end up nationally, where you rank in your coach's eyes, you know?
I understand. But we've also seen that on the U.S. men's national team. Sometimes the decisions were who to play and who to make the club at certain points also don't make a lot of sense. Specifically, Ricardo Pepi, who's been passed up on, you know, recently in the last year or so for big opportunities, which had a lot of us wondering what was going on.
Yeah, and I think it plays into the just how deep they are at that forward position, and also it kind of has something to do a little bit with Greg Berhalter, you know, the coach. He's in the last World Cup, if you guys were keeping up with it and keeping up with the circles in soccer, is there was a lot of controversy with who was called up by Greg Berhalter and who was played and who wasn't, and the rumor was that there was controversy within the parents of the team as to who was on the starting 11 and who was getting minutes and who wasn't. So, yeah, it's a complicated issue, and I think Greg Berhalter has a really difficult job of being the head of that when you have so much talent. All these guys are so young, they have so much talent, and you don't know who to call up. And I think that's where he's at right now. He's in a difficult spot.
If they had that much talent, shouldn't they be better going up against the best in the world when we come to World Cup play and some of the other big tournaments that they usually disappoint when it's all said and done?
Well, yeah, but I think that this is, you know, the foundation where you're building something where, and eventually kids are watching this and seeing that you can compete on an international stage, and eventually things start to change. You know, if you don't start off competing little by little, you're never going to get there to the top. So I think that USA is right there on the cusp of, you know, just something huge. You know, you see so many young guys that are in leagues in Europe that are contributing significantly to the European teams, and then they come to the national team and they have disappointing outings. And I think that's going to soon change here. You know, my dad told me since I was little, like, forget about Mexico. The U.S. is going to win one before Mexico will ever win anything. So I've known it's coming. Why? Because these guys are dedicated. Their development is the most important thing to them, and the most important thing to the league and MLS. MLS is dedicated to sending guys to Europe and developing them out there, because you're not going to develop them the same here in the States.
Are you wearing a Mexican national team jersey today?
Yeah, the 98 reprint.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. By the way, do you own any U.S. men's national team jerseys?
No, I do not. I'm not a fan.
You're not a fan of the U.S. You're a fan of Mexico.
Yeah, so the way I was thinking about this recently, the way I was introduced to international soccer was during the 2006 World Cup. I was 8, max. I was 7 or 8, and my dad, we were watching the game, and it was Mexico-Argentina, and my dad sat me down, and this is how he broke it to me, a 7-year-old. He said, Mexico is not good, and they will never be good, and they will never win anything in your life, and they always disappoint. Oh, yeah, and by the way, these guys, the U.S. men's national team, they own us. They beat us up however they want, and it was just like disappointing to be an 8-year-old and hearing all this stuff, but ultimately a lot of that's been true, and the way we've seen the U.S. men's national team advance and the things they've been doing is great. So he's right, and yeah, it's a lot of disappointment on the Mexican side.
Hey, props to your dad for telling you as an 8-year-old how it was.
Yeah.
And basically saying, sorry, kid, the truth hurts. And that was it, just giving you the lowdown right out of the gate when you're an 8-year-old.
Yeah, and then Argentina does something to us in the next. Mexico qualifies in 2006 to the next round, and Maxi Rodriguez hits a volley from outside of the box to beat us, to put it, I believe it was a 2-1 score. A volley from outside of the box. Yeah. The box. There's nothing I've seen like it, and it's something that haunts me to this day when I see it. And it's an incredible goal, an all-time World Cup goal. But yeah, Mexico is always getting put out by bigger forces, and if it's not that, it's no era penal. Which is always painful.
Hey, I need to let everybody know tomorrow we are going to be live. Excited about this. Tomorrow we are going to be out at Escadete broadcasting the show for 2 hours. Adrian, you've got golf playing in the morning at 10 a.m. And after that, on the air at 4. We got a lot in store there as well. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't wait for tomorrow, Steve. It is Escadete Golf Course. We are back in action. Escadete is having so many great events all throughout the summer. We're going to be promoting their big, Nights Under the Lights campaign. They're starting this tomorrow, and it runs all summer. It actually runs all the way through September. And what this is they actually open up the driving range 7 to 10 every single Fridays and Saturdays. Mm-hmm. $6 large range buckets. So if you're trying to practice, if you're a beginner, or if you're an expert and you just love going out on the range and having some fun, Escondida is definitely the place to be. It's Nights Under the Lights, and it's coming up. It starts tomorrow. We're going to kick things off with them tomorrow, but it runs all the way every Friday and Saturday through September 28th. And then for the ladies out there, for women listeners out there, we've got Gals Gone Golfing as well. Mike Smith, that's the PGA Pro out there at Escondida Golf Course. He's going to be holding these different sessions. It includes lessons, range balls, green fees, golf cart, and then a prize at the end. That's all that comes with this. It's every Friday night from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. starting tomorrow. So anybody out there trying to learn the sport of golf for the first time, if you're a female, give them a call. 915-771-2392.
And the name of that program is called?
Gals Gone Golfing.
Ooh,
it's back
it.
In action.
I love it. Gals Gone Golfing and Nights Under the Lights. Two terrific ways to promote everything going on with us. Out at Escondida. Folks, our apologies. We will not be able to bring Michael Cooper on the show today due to scheduling issues for us. So I know a lot of you are probably looking forward to that conversation. You'll get a chance to still meet him on Saturday. And hopefully when you do that, everybody will have a good time to enjoy themselves and meet one of the all-time greats, Hall of Famer, one of the best defensive players in the game, not to mention Lobo great, Laker great. So that's all happening on Saturday. All right. Meantime, I'm excited about tomorrow. Last time I was out there, Mike Smith was giving me lessons on how to grip a club properly and take my cuts. That was really cool. And then as we were wrapping up, we started to see the ladies head out to the golf course.
That's right. Tomorrow, Steve, fortunately, we will be inside the pro shop.
Thank
God. It's going to be boiling tomorrow. We will roast. Me, Alberto, and Michael will be playing a round of 18. We'll give you the full report. We're all predicting, or at least me and Alberto are predicting, that Michael will kill us both.
He's a golfer,
He's the secret golfer among us. Wish we had Cade McConnell with us tomorrow because he's the real golfer out of our entire radio station. But, yeah, really excited for tomorrow. We'll give you the full report.
What time is the course open until at night for Nights Under the Lights?
So it opens all the way till 10.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. They've got the spotlights. They're beautiful. And you could just be out there forever. If you bring like maybe $20 or something like that, you'll have a great time getting all those, taking advantage of the $6 range buckets. And then, of course, the great lights out there.
We're going. We will do Night Under the Lights. That sounds like right up my alley.
Nice. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's always good to bring the family out there. Real casual, beautiful driving range, and they've got a nice practice area, too.
Awesome. All right, let's go to Charlie One with traffic. Then when we come back, we'll meet the brand new head coach of your El Paso Locomotive FC. We'll do that right after Charlie One as we continue.
And yes, we started off well, but... we need to get better consistency. With consistency, that's the most important right now.
Now, first off, I got to ask you, is it Wilmer or is it Vilmer? The correct pronunciation for your first name is?
Well, my name originally comes from Germany.
Okay.
So the Germans would say Wilmer.
Yep.
But in the W in Latin America and United States, is Wilmer. So I grew up with Wilmer.
Got it. We'll call you Wilmer then. Or call you Coach. How's that? And by the way, I mean, you just said it. You said we got to get better. We got to get more consistent. You just got here. So it's almost as if every day you spend with this club, you're learning more and more about this club. And it's going to take a little time before you probably really have an opportunity to know everything that this club is capable of.
Yes, definitely. But it's my job. My job is to adapt to the club. It's not the club and the players adapt to me. My job is I have to come over here. I have to adapt to the city, to the weather, to the Interstate number 10.
That's right.
East, west, downtown, UTEP, everything. And I have to learn quickly, and also I need to learn the style of life here in El Paso in order for us to mimic that in our everyday life, everyday practice. And then when we play, we can understand and represent the city correctly.
Now, first off, you're a vet. You've been in this sport a long time. You've been coaching a while, and you've got a lot of USL coaching experience, especially with the UT Rio Grande Valley. What's it like staying in the state of Texas and finally getting out of the humidity and now enjoying the dry heat that is El Paso?
Let me tell you, because, yes, I was in Florida. I lived in Florida. And, you know, I moved to McAllen, Texas. And it was humid and hot. And then coming over here, it's a relief. And it's fantastic. I love the weather. It's unbelievable, beautiful, dry heat. It's incredible. I've been talking with, you know, my kids, my family, friends. And I've been, you know, telling them, the weather over here is fun. It's unique. It's fantastic.
And I'll tell you this much too: if you enjoy Mexican food, you've finally come to the right place.
Definitely, yes. Obviously, I tried the Tex-Mex for 3 years in Rio Grande Valley, but coming over here, it's even more history, even more tradition. No doubt about it, and it's fantastic.
Listen, no disrespect to you, to Rio Grande Valley. That stuff doesn't count. That's not right. If you want the real stuff, you've come to the right place. Now, Coach, I got to ask you: you get a chance to have your first match on the sidelines last Friday against Charleston. It was one of those matches where we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know how this team was going to come in and play. Not only did they play well, they were able to get the win, the 3 points. You tell me, I mean, what was the locker room like when you went back and saw a team that just has been wanting to feel good after matches, celebrate a little bit, know that they knocked off one of the best teams in this entire league and did it on the road?
It was a great reward for the players and a great release of that type of pressure. Because we needed to cut the, you know, it's, you know, that, you know, it's becoming a snowball. Just it's coming after you and it's heavy on your shoulders.
Yep.
And you can feel it. I was feeling it. And the players, they were like that, even though you don't want to, but it's impossible because of the results. And the last result here again, Birmingham, I believe, or, you know, Memphis? Memphis in the, you know, 94th minute, receiving that second goal is, you know, it kills your motivation. It kills your, you know, it kills you mentally. So definitely it was a good relief. And I told the players, please enjoy. Is there a win? Because it's not like I came when I had a wand and, you know, I did magic. No. They did it. I tried to help them is to believe in themselves a little bit more. I have to, you know, changing things, changing the message. It's always, you know, something positive when it happens. And, yes, the game is not that we play fantastic. No. But we fought. But we had, you know, desire to compete. And it was the best team in so far, the best team in the USL. And that was a great opportunity for them to, you know what? Yeah, we're in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. We're bad. We're sick. We're in an IC unit, but we're going to get better.
I love it. All right, we're talking with Wilmer Cabrera. He is the brand new head coach, technical director, El Paso Locomotive FC. Team has got their next home match this Saturday night, 7 o'clock, Birmingham Legion. Alberto's going to tell us all about the promotional aspects of that coming up in just a little bit. You join a club that's been playing a style of football the whole season, same style that they've been, you know, practicing and used to. For you, whether or not that's the style that you have coached over the years, do you almost slowly try to integrate new things, new changes, or Do you keep it the way it is? And like you said, handle more of the mental aspect of it. And almost for you, be like as much a mental coach to this team as you would trying to put all the strategy and the technical aspects together on the pitch before every match.
No, definitely. I like to, obviously, you know, I believe the type of players can play in a different ways. Mm-hmm. And they can perform better implementing little details, little by little.
Got it.
So that's what we've been trying to do. And today we completed the fifth practice that I have with the team. And I think they're growing, and we are all, because for me it's a learning curve also, we are all learning about each other. We are just moving forward. Their attitude is fantastic. They're trying to do it. So for me, that is important, because in practices, we see the changes. We see the changes that, oh, you know what, this is working. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect, but it's working in the right direction. So they get motivated. And when you start doing something and in practice and it works, okay, you know what? You start believing more in. And for me, that's the importance. They need to believe more in themselves. And if they believe in themselves and they believe that what we've been doing works well for them, that's the key. Because I don't play. Yeah. It's everything is for them.
Not anymore. You played. You had a 20-year run as a player, and essentially a 20-year run now as a manager and a coach. Is this the first time that you've ever come into a club mid-season like this?
No, maybe I was in Montreal. You know, I got released from Houston Dynamo. Mm-hmm. And the beginning, in the middle of the season, that was August, and right away they called me and they asked me, "Do you want to come to Montreal?" And you know, I said, "Yes, I'm sitting watching. I'd rather to be on the field, and if I can help, I'm gonna help." And at the end, it was a wonderful experience, and we were able to win the Canadian Cup, so it was good.
By the way, I've been told that of all the cities in Canada, Montreal is one of the most beautiful cities that you have to visit, because they speak English, they speak French, you know, they're French Canadians, and it's a sports city that just, they support every sport they have. Obviously, hockey is the big one, but they'll support them all.
Definitely, yes. I didn't have the experience or the possibilities to go to Montreal often, but you know, living in Montreal was fantastic. It's a fantastic spirit of the city. They're very proud of their Canadian-French culture, and the food and the lifestyle. It's incredible. And yes, they love the sport, and they're very passionate about any sport, and they are really, you know, very close to each other in that aspect.
Coach, you've been here before with the Rio Grande Valley over the years, so you're familiar with this club, you're familiar with the city and the venue. When you look at this roster, top to bottom, and it's not really even a fair question because you've only had one match and five practices, which is not a lot. But as you really look at this roster, tell me about the talent level, because we have been talking about this all season long and feel like there's a lot of talent on this club, and they haven't really had the opportunity to see the benefits, the reward of what this club is capable of early on. And maybe now we could start to see a little more of that here.
Yes, definitely. You know, player by player, you see talent. And you know, one of the reasons that I decided to come is because, you know, you have to be smart enough to say, okay, I'm going to go to this club or I'm going to go to that club, but which one has better roster, mm-hmm. more talent, and better support? And I didn't doubt in a moment that, you know, El Paso has good talent. They did a good job trying bringing a good roster of players because they have proved themselves with their background, individual background and resume, that they're being successful wherever they have played. So it's matter of understand that, okay, now over here, they cannot, you cannot bring what you have done and thinking that it's going to work here just because you have done it. You have to come over here understanding that it's a new challenge, new chapter, and you have to start competing like from zero. What you have done doesn't matter. It's in the past. Now you need to do it again. You need to start over, and you need to prove yourself that what you have done is, yeah, it was really positive, and you can do it again over here. Otherwise, it's not good enough. And yes, individually, they have a very good resume, but it's not about individuals. It's about a team. And how can we, with that talent, individual talent, can put it together in order for us to be a better team? That's the key. Because at the end, the team is that is going to be able to go, to win, to qualify, and to recover from any, you know, loss, or to continue winning and moving forward towards what we want, which is the playoff possibilities.
Wilmer Cabrera joining us here on Sports Talk as we continue. This comes into the show from Nelson. Love the new coach. Motivational, caring, realistic, and seems determined to get the best out of the team individually and together. So there you go. You've got one already that's on board with you, Coach. As far as fans go, if you want to watch this team in action, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, Birmingham Legion at Southwest University Park. Alberto is with us as well. Alberto, big night. It's Pride Night. There's a fireworks show. There's a lot that's going to be happening when Birmingham comes to town.
Yeah, man, you just took the words right out of my mouth. Thank you for having me on the show once again. You know, always a pleasure to be here, Steve. But yes, we're going to be ringing in the new month with Pride Night. You know, it's a Pride Month, so we're inviting, you know, everyone in across El Paso, especially people in the LGBTQ community, to come out and celebrate with some soccer. You know, we're all about inclusion. We're all about, you know, including everybody, celebrating diversity, and we really want to, you know, celebrate that at Southwest University Park this Saturday. And then, like you said earlier, right now, we have a post-match fireworks show. Those are always very popular at Southwest University Park. And hopefully we can ring that first fireworks show of the year with a win on Saturday. No pressure, Wilmer, but, you know.
It has to be a pressure.
Exactly. He loves pressure.
He does. And by the way, he's been delivering. That's the most important thing. Also, this just came in a little while ago as well from one of our other listeners, Neff Poppy. Coach has the maturity and the steam that the locomotive needed. So there you go, coming from one of our regulars on the show. And Coach, just in the last 15 minutes you've been on, our listeners are gathering that. They're hearing that. They know what you are demanding of the team, probably of yourself. But the key is, it's a long season. We know that. It's a really long season. So for you, I mean, what do you look for every match? Do you look for little things, little pieces of progress, since we're not talking until really October, till the finish line?
Yes, definitely. What I want is progress. Progress, but, you know, that the progress has to be consistent. Consistent progress in all aspects, where we need to be solid, more solid, set pieces. You know, because we're conceding a lot of goals in set pieces. Mm-hmm. So that means concentration. When you receive a goal on set pieces, it's about concentration, individual concentration. So we have to make sure that they get better at that. Then defensively, we need to be better. We're receiving goals every game. So you need to be more solid defensively. And then when you have the ball, you have to be more creative. You need to feel more comfortable taking care of the ball. I said to the players, when we don't have the ball, we are runners. But when we have the ball, we are soccer players. Because the only way to play soccer is with the ball, in possession of the ball. And then when we have possession, we have to display creativity. We have to display the individual skills, but we need to make sure that we take care of the ball. The opponent without the ball, they cannot score on us.
Give me an idea of what to expect from you on the sidelines, not just Saturday, but for every match. Are you composed? Are you fiery on the sidelines? What do you turn into, like, same personality as you are right now with us? Or do things change a little bit when the lights go on and you've got a regular match coming up?
Always the same. And I don't like to sit during the match. I sit, you know, before. As soon as the game starts, I get up. I like to watch the game standing because for me is I need to pay attention to what's going on right there. How can I help the guys? How can I help? What I have to see in order for them to adjust little details, because at the end, you know, my work goes from Monday to Friday. Saturday, I have to be on the sideline. And I'm rooting for them. And maybe telling them a little bit, listen, adjust this, or be careful with that, or pay attention to this detail. But that's it, nothing else. And then just make sure that, you know, they feel supported. That's, you know, that's the most important. I want them to... coach is there supporting us. If something is positive, I'm cheering for them. If something is negative, I try to help them. It's not like the end of the world.
Right.
Don't worry. Let's go. And it's trying to make sure that they feel support.
You're a player's coach. That's just what it comes down to. And being a former player, knowing you've been in their shoes, you've seen it on that side, I'm sure that also is a big factor for you, because now as you have moved on to this career, you know exactly what they can relate to because you've been there.
Definitely. And when I was a player, I thought, oh, I'm never going to be a coach. I don't like it. Because, you know, I never thought I could be a good coach. But then when I moved to the United States and I started to work with little kids, 5 years old, 7 years old, 9, 12, 15, 17, and, you know, older and older, I noticed that for me, help them, educate them, giving some tools, ideas, and the fact that I went through all that, all those ages, all those problems, and I was able to communicate with them at the same level, because they say, okay, you see what happened when you do this? Why you don't try this? Maybe it's good for you. So it's just a good way to touch them and to communicate with them. For me, that's the job. And then obviously organizing and a little bit of tactical aspect or everything that we all do as a coaches. But that aspect that you can touch the player and the player can change in a positive way, that's something that for me is the reward.
Coach, enjoyed the conversation. Enjoyed meeting you. Come back and see us again, and let's make it 2 in a row Saturday night.
Yes, that's the plan, hopefully, because that would be the first game winning at home this season, and we need that. We all need that. The players need to feel that. The city needs to feel that. We all need to feel that we can win at home, because it's our home. So we have to be stronger at home.
Enjoyed it. Coach, come back.
Thank you.
Wilmer Cabrera, folks. He'll be on the sidelines this Saturday, 7 o'clock. Birmingham in town. Pride Night Fireworks Show. Tickets available. EPLocomotiveFC.com. Come back. Wrap things up with Tim Haggerty next. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues.